everybody, and welcome to this meeting of the Jacksonville Ethics Commission. We'll start with introductions of the people up here. My name is Joseph Rogan, and I was appointed by the Chief Judge.
Darcy Gammer, I was appointed by the State Attorney.
Carla Miller, Ethics Director.
Kirby Oberdorfer, Deputy Director, Ethics Office.
Sherry Pollack, Office of General Counsel. J.J. Dixon, appointed by the Sheriff.
Paul Nebode, Office of the Mayor.
Imani Boykin, appointed by the Ethics Commission.
Latonya Wilson Smith, appointed by the Ethics Commission.
George Candler, appointed by the Council President.
Hello, I'm Ellen Schmidt-Ivers, appointed by the Ethics Commission.
Thank you, everybody. If you'll please stand, we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And Ms. Miller, do we have an ethics thought?
Yes, we have an ethics thought. This is from John Stuart Mill on Liberty. A person may cause evil to others, not only by his actions, but by his inaction. And in either case, he is justly accountable to them for the injury.
Very good. We'll next move on to minutes approval. Has everybody had an opportunity to review the minutes of our commission meeting on May 23rd, 2019?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Does anybody have a motion on those minutes?
I would move to accept the minutes.
Okay. Scanner has moved to approve those minutes. Is there a second? All right, the motion has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, I'll take the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? By your action, you've approved the minutes of our meeting on May 23rd, 2019. Next, we're going to hear from our city's Inspector General, Lisa Green. Ms. Green here, come on up. Maybe somebody can move the podium for you.
I'll hold it a little bit. I kind of like to walk around, you know. She didn't want to come. I kind of don't, but I need some more material.
We'll have you.
In case I need
to die. That's right. Thank you so much for being here. And just background for the commissioners while Ms. Green is getting settled. I asked her to come after the last meeting because I know a majority of you have not met her yet. Our Inspector General, Ms. Green, is now the longest serving Inspector General in the history of Jacksonville.
Yay!
So it's a very proud day to be able to say that. She's done great things in the Inspector General's office. We've spoken regularly. And she interacts very well with the city here. It does really great work that I can't do justice to here. So I will turn it over to her.
Okay, thank you very much for having me. Inside your packet, you'll find I do have a trifold. We pass this out to all of our outreach activities. I have a brief slide thing if you want to take notes of some of the critical things, but and then the other one is the annual report. All of our reports are online, but before I get started, I'd like to introduce Jonathan Parrish. He's the Director of Investigations, and he's the second longest employee with Jonathan.
Go ahead, please.
Don't
worry.
Okay. All right, thanks for having me here. I appreciate the support of everyone, especially we owe a lot of gratitude to Carla Miller, who was instrumental in realizing that we needed an Office of Inspector General. Basically, I know most of you are the professions that you're in, you are familiar with compliance and oversight to some level in different venues. I come with a background of about 24 and a half years of federal law enforcement OIG, where I spent the last 7 years overseeing 300 programs, 30 agencies as an assistant special agent in charge. To say I'm passionate about this work is probably an understatement. In fact, if anybody knows anything about me, this is what I do. So if you're not familiar with an OIG, basically the first slide, just to let you know that the mission really is to foster and promote accountability and integrity in the government. So with Carla's foresight and support and a lot of support from City Council, this office was established in October of 2014. And it was limited to the legislative, just to the city side of things. In spring of March, the following spring, in March of 2015, voter referendum was put out to expand the jurisdiction to all of the entire consolidated government. So we do have the full consolidated government, which includes the independents, the constitutional officers, and independents, constitutional officers, basically everybody, school board. We do not do anything related to the
for law enforcement. So all the work we're doing from an investigation standpoint is administrative in nature. The ordinance that we are established is under the ethics code, and so in the back of your annual report, and you don't have to look at it now, but we do have the full ordinance which talks about all the things that we are able to do, our, you know, our oversight responsibilities. In the very back, after the charter, let's see, it's appendix. Appendix one is the charter provisions with the office, and then appendix two is all of our ordinances. So if you ever had a question with you, this is a really good thing just to carry with you, because it will help you understand further. So we talked briefly about the oversight of the entire consolidated government, and we do that with a staff of 9 people. So we're doing the best that we can. We do have quite a bit of things coming in, and it varies every day. So pretty exciting some days, more than others, depending on what comes in. We do often work with the ethics office. Often they're calling us, sharing information. And often the things that we develop through our doing fraud, waste, and abuse investigations, audits, and contracts kind of have that touch over on the ethics side. So we make sure that if there's that component, they get that information so that they can do whatever they need to do. The office chart, basically an org chart, next slide, this one here. The org chart basically shows that we have 3 units, the audit, the contract oversight, and the investigation. On the upper corner, I report directly to the Inspector General Selection and Retention Committee, of which Mr. Rogan is a member at this time. They have full responsibility for the hiring and the firing of the IDs, and they've been fully exercised in the last few years. So hopefully we'll slow that process down a little bit. And so basically also I present a proposed budget, and I pretty much, they're a support board for me if I need something. So there are a lot of wonderful professionals on that, and it allows me a chance to have a good dialogue. So if you look on the right above where I have my title, or the title of Inspector General, is the citizens. This entire office really is responsible to the citizens of Jacksonville for the entire Duval County, because all of this is all of the taxpayer money. So we're, you know, basically all the reports are posted online. We do have a website, you know, in conjunction with the city. So you can find all of our reports, all of our news. There's a feedback page, and there's an opportunity to provide citizens a chance to give input on economy and efficiency. The breakdown of the units is audit, pretty much very similar. Doing internal audits is basically to review audit processes within the city and the independence if we need to do that. Contract oversight is responsible from cradle to grave, looking at some of the contracts that are going on in the city, trying to make improvements or recommendations in the event that there's something that isn't quite right. Obviously, it's to, across the board, give an equitable opportunity to everybody who wants to participate, because we all know government and contracts, they go together hand in hand. Audit and contracts are somewhat proactive, where the investigative unit is usually reactive. However, there are times when we might identify a system or improvement that needs to be addressed immediately. What comes to mind is a potential breach of confidentiality when I first got here. In doing what was right, sending out the health benefit letters in the fall to all the employees via email, they had all the addresses. Well, they were just getting ready to submit the button on JSO, and I said, stop, because we're exempt. And the only reason I know this happened is because it came to me, and I'm exempt too, being retired federal law enforcement and an IG in the state of Florida. So that's the kind of thing where you might be real proactive. Hey, maybe you want to reconsider doing a different method. Maybe just take the name and get, you know, some of the information off. So most of the staff is in the investigative unit. We have 4 investigators and also 2 investigations. I'm actually a working IG, so I do sit in on interviews. I'll do copying, all that stuff, whatever needs to be done. We're very small, so we all chip in. One shift that we're doing is we're trying to get out the message of what to report to the IG, and we incorporate it in the pamphlet and also in this bullet. Some people really don't understand what they need to report. They don't understand the nuances between ethics, so we tried to provide examples. I teach at the new employee orientation and out in the community at the CPACs, just to give them ideas. So I think for people that are on the outside, they may see things related to vendors that are doing business with the city. They're also going to see a lot of the employees. If they're out in the fields, you know, if they're doing something wrong, we're going to know about it. So as an example, we did have a solid waste worker that was actually, supposed to go around, pick up materials, take to the landfill. Well, we found that he was reported that he was at home during the day. And that's fine, he's at home for a couple hours doing all that, not really, right? But then what's worse is he made it worse, he signed up on a Friday on overtime and sat there the entire day. And this has been going on. And we are only looking at snippets of time, so we realize that what we're looking at has probably been a cultural habit for quite some time. He doesn't work here anymore. So, you know, again, we're focusing on trying to let people know what we should be looking to as far as reporting. They generally fall in two categories, employee misconduct and matters relating to contract oversight. So that could be where on the inside, maybe the employee is too close to the contractor or the vendor, maybe getting gifts, or possibly maybe the vendor is submitting false information to get materials, or could also be that they're not even meeting the deliverables. Some of this doesn't necessarily rise to anything other than operational and maybe internal control tightening. But clearly what we don't do, you know, specific operational things. So if someone calls and said, NCCD isn't doing the right permitting or this or that, and I think it's the wrong permit, that's operational. I turn that over, we get rid of that right away. We do things that have to do strictly that are basically more allegations of misconduct, fraud, waste, and abuse. We are the, in the city, the whistleblower official. So everybody who wants to be protected under whistleblower protection, the city has a very robust statute that provides for that. And, you know, to avoid retaliation, it's mirrored after the state statute. But they have to come to the office and we grant them on the same conditions that the state does look at. Does it rise to a public health or safety endangerment issue, or is it within the gross mismanagement, malfeasance, and things like that? And so we're getting people to understand they need to come through me to help keep the confidentiality. So we do review every complaint for whistleblower, you know, potential of the people that we know about. So the biggest message is getting people to report things, but also tell us who they are so we can really get the depth and breadth. Because as you know, if you only have a piece, you're like, wow, this could be something that I don't have enough. And I can't work it if I don't have enough. So again, we're shifting towards trying to let people know. The other thing too is we're looking for things on waste. A lot of folks may not have business with the city, but they may see duplicate processes. A lot of the new people, I try to encourage, you know, they're all coming from the outside, and they probably know how to do something a little more efficiently or effectively, and asking them for their input, and I'm just saying, look, if you're not getting the response you need from your management, come to our office and let us know and see if you can't. We've actually had some just complaints related on duplication of efforts, and some of them have been eliminated. So that would be duplication of mailing or emailing or postage, mm-hmm. all of the three. Maybe we can get around just to two, but maybe not the third, so we could do something like that. Two administrations have supported an employee reporting policy, so there's a policy under Mr. Curry, and basically it says employees shall cooperate. You will provide records, you shall. If you don't really have a choice. They can be represented, but they do need to participate, and we do all the due process, everything that, you know, someone says, hey, I want my union rep or my attorney, we're going to work with you. We're going to work with you, because it can be stressful, but it's good to see the administration support, because I think that that starts at the top. Some of the authority that we have the official whistleblower protection. We do have administrative subpoena powers, which we have used on banks. We have actually used it for testimony. We had a witness that was an employee, and she didn't want to come back in. She had lied, so I said, nah, that's how you're going to get back in, so we use that for that. And then the investigators put everybody under oath, everything is sworn and recorded, so for the officials, so it can be pretty intimidating. So we try our best to be very compassionate, because a lot of it is just getting their side of the story and hearing what's happening. And then we also, I guess, require the production of documents. So as far as what we're responsible for, and I'll go, this is this last piece. We basically what we're doing is fact-finding. Mm-hmm. Based on that, we're looking to identify systemic problems, lack of internal control. Because even if you have a criminal case, you know, it's going to be resulting in something didn't go right at the administrative level. Something didn't go right at the management level. Maybe we're signing off an overtime and we're not really doing a good job checking. We had a situation where, traffic engineering gets called out, and at on the overtime, it's an automatic 4 hours. And so there were instances where through the JSO, they would get the reporters at the lights, so they'd go out and do it. Well, there were several times that there weren't any call-out. There's no backup, nothing, but they're getting overtime. So no one was checking to make sure that they were being called out against something that was sound that they could double-check. So we made recommendations. At the end of the day, regardless whether it's administrative or criminal, we're looking to make recommendations. And in the 2018 annual report which I issued under my tenure, we added in at the back the actual recommendations, so the public could really see what we were actually saying during for certain situations. And then what we do is we share those reports with all of the agencies. We put them on CDC, it's on the web, but we also send them to the independents, because there might be something that some other organizations say, wow, we might have this problem, and maybe they'll take something from that. So those are included. What we're not responsible for, we do not make policy. We just make policy recommendations. We refer anything that's criminal to the criminal authorities, and that includes any federal partners. We work really closely with the state's attorney's office. We have worked with the FBI, Homeland Security, FDLE, state's attorney's investigators, HUD, Homeland Security. So the other side of it is anybody in the federal, I have connections from my past, so there's not any agency I don't know that I can pick up the phone and call. And some of those same agencies have oversight over any pass-through dollars. So like in housing, some of the money that comes in from the federal government will come down. So there's opportunities for when we may have to call them in when we see potentially a criminal violation within whatever the allegations being investigated. We make recommendations to take corrective actions, which we discuss. We don't investigate sworn law enforcement officers, and we don't make the disciplinary decisions. It's all fact-based. It should be sufficiently solid, thorough, so that anyone in management can make the right decision that's right for the agency. And we don't think anyone to do the criminal investigation. So in a nutshell, I know that's really fast. That's kind of what we do. Anybody have any questions?
Thank you. Any questions?
I have one.
Go ahead.
I know that you individually can be certified, and then the office can be accredited. And so what is the status of that in the office now?
Okay. So all of the staff, all the auditors, and all the investigators, and myself all have Association of Inspector General certifications. They're professional certifications, which basically everyone's taught to professional standards. Those standards are based on the federal standards, of which I have over 20 years of experience. What Ms. Miller is referring to is there's an accreditation process in the state of Florida through the Florida accreditation. Florida Commission for Law Enforcement. They have a program for the IGs, and there's a set of standards that are very similar and aligned with everything that is already being done. When you go through that process, it's an initial process of about 2 years, and then you have an external peer review. So what that does is once we demonstrate that we have met and we comply with all our standards, we become accredited. So the law enforcement are accredited, the correction side is accredited, and now they have an IG component. And so once we achieve that, which we're anticipating to be in June, I did have to ask it for an extension. We've had 4 IGs on the 4th IG, and we've gone through a lot of turnover, and positions have changed. So I've gone before the commission in writing to ask for an extension, which I believe we're going to be granted. And then once we get officially accredited, then we will then every 3 years on a reoccurring be accredited and then be reviewed externally. And then independent of that, we have to have our audit external reviews based on the IIA standards. So the value of having accreditation is it just gives everybody the boost of confidence that we're doing what we're supposed to be doing and we're not doing it willy-nilly. So that's the purpose of that.
Yeah, and
thank you.
And well done on that, because for a young office to move that fast on the accreditation is really good.
Well, we're going to push through.
Good.
Are you receiving complaints from citizens or just primarily employees?
The complaints come from everybody.
Okay.
We get them from citizens.
Mm-hmm.
We get them from internal employees. Former employees have a lot to offer.
Okay.
And vendors are complaining. And, sometimes what I really love to see is when the management inside is actually self-reporting, like, wow, we just found this. Can you please help us out? So we're getting it from all levels. We do, onto that, thank you for letting me remember something else. The independent authorities, I'm working on a protocol with independent authorities. I have one with JEA. We've had one for 2 years. Everything that comes into JEA through their hotline comes to me, and we make a decision whether we should take the lead on it or not. And so that is working very well. What that does, it ensures uniformity in the way everyone is treated. So ultimately, I'm going to just say out loud, I'd love to see one hotline for fraud, waste, and abuse and come into my office and get rid of all the money that's being spent at the other, mm-hmm. so it's all coming the same. Mm-hmm. Because it's either coming to her office or it's coming mm-hmm. to mine. And I'm having to send it to her, and she's sending it to me, because it's kind of scattered still. Mm-hmm. But so we're working on protocols. And I do know that just recently, I just met with the property appraiser this week, who advised that, I guess under the current governor, an amendment is coming to the property appraiser's office and some of the taxation bodies, that they are supposed to have procedures in place to ensure that they are focused on fraud, waste, and abuse. So mm-hmm. they were like, what am I going to do? I said, well, we're going to give you training, and we're going to help you do this. So it is becoming widespread. So I think it's going to help, too, with some of the things that we're trying to accomplish. So.
Anything else?
I look forward to hearing from you next year.
Okay, I'll promise to be here. Okay,
thank you.
Okay, have a great afternoon. Thank you. Thank you,
Lisa.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
All right, we'll move on to committee reports. Their report from ECHO.
Cherry, could you hand me that?
Oh, sorry.
There is one. She gets a microphone.
There you go.
Just a quick report. It's been a very busy month, and thank you to the commission members who came to the June 5th training of the City Council. We had about 100 people in attendance, all of the newly elected officials, and we went over all the state laws, sunshine laws, conflict of interest laws, so thank you very much for coming. We also trained all the council assistants, and today we did new employee training, which we do every month. Next week we're doing board training, so a lot of training. As a result of the training, the questions have picked up, so the phone's ringing more because Kirby did an excellent training on the conflict of interest laws with pictures, and Andrea, our training director, put together things that you can just look at a PowerPoint slide and you get the idea of what a conflict is, and it was so clear. So now we're getting a lot of questions on conflicts of interest. A lot of elected officials are calling and saying, I have a business relationship with this person, and then, and we're starting to track them. And so that means a much higher awareness of our elected officials. So a lot of training this last month. And we've also had sunshine issues, which I've sent you all of the clippings on and the front page today. That's been very interesting. You can train on sunshine, and then when you actually see something happen in a body and how that's dealt with, it's very interesting. So that sunshine issue that I sent you information on has been handled. So it's been a busy month.
One of our obligations under the COVID is findings to provide assistance and input into the management coordination of training. And I can tell you, and I'm sure the people who attended with me can tell you, that training was really well done. It was really well done. I thought it was focused on high level. It was not trying to make any individual attendee a professional ethics officer. It was just designed to teach people to spot issues of when you should pick up the phone. And that's the right analysis. Some of these laws are really complicated, especially at the state level, trying to get the gift laws right, figure out if somebody that's giving you a gift is a lobbyist or does business with the city, and are they giving you the gift for that purpose, or why are they giving a gift to your spouse? And figuring out these things are complicated. And so Carla Kirby and Andrea, and together with Jason Gabriel and Paige and the other deputy general counsel,
Peggy,
all did a really good job focusing on high-level issues and teaching everybody who was there when to pick up the phone, not necessarily how to resolve the question on their own. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really tempting to just want to go through the conflicts laws and the gift laws and to try to make people professional in that area. It's impossible. So I really thought it was well done.
Thank you.
Anything else on that? From the others who attended, anything? I think Dr. Cameron actually stayed for the longest.
It's because your wife was there.
That's probably it.
All right. Thank you. Anything from OTC?
No report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Committee reports. Do you have anything from complaints?
No complaints.
Thank you. I'm going to defer the legislative committee report until we get to the business that involves them. Do we have anything from open government?
No report for open government.
Thank you. Any report from internal ops? I think we should rearrange this and talk about Unite America now. Does that work for everybody? Okay. So I will invite to the podium Harry Wagg.
You got it right.
From Unite America. And if you could introduce your group, please. And thank you so much for being here.
We appreciate you having us. My name is Harry Wagg. I'm the National Volunteer Coordinator for Unite America and also the Northeast Florida Chapter Leader. I'm a stay-at-home dad, and it's all a volunteer thing. We are a nationwide, nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization dedicated to helping bridge the partisan divide. We work with a bunch of other organizations in the democracy reform movement, including Fair Vote and Represent Us and the National Association of Nonpartisan Reformers and the Bridge Alliance. We're trying to get election reforms and anti-corruption laws passed around the country. So the podium's here, I'm not going to use it, right?
Yes, please.
The microphone will pick up better if you're
okay.
Closer to it.
Good. You hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
So our purpose before you today, very simply, is to ask for your help. Our recent municipal election turnout, as you all know, is appalling, 24% in the first round, 14% in the second round. And as much as your mandate will allow you to, we'd ask for your help to help us to convince the city council to pass an ordinance to move the elections to November of a regular election cycle, and also to institute ranked choice voting for those future municipal elections. I'm going to cite a section of the city code here that, as far as the City Ethics Commission is concerned, where we believe it, you know, allows, gives you the mandate to get involved and help us with this. It says, although the people of Jacksonville have learned from and responded to past mistakes, there should be an aspiration to much higher standards. Ethics is defined as the study of the general nature of morals and moral choices to be made by the individual in his or her relationships with others. Ethics is more than the avoidance of criminal behavior. It is a commitment for public servants to take individual responsibility in creating a government that has the trust and respect of its citizens. Furthermore, it states, with the above in mind, the City of Jacksonville hereby adopts the following goals for the City Ethics Program. Promulgate and implement a comprehensive approach to ethics and integrity in Jacksonville government, and promote public confidence in public officers and employees and the ethical operation of government. Now, in light of our recent municipal elections, the message from the population of Duval County is one of apathy, and they're checked out. They're not interested. Why is this? Is it because our local government has earned their trust and respect? We believe they have trust. They have trust that the system is rigged, that anybody who gets elected to local offices are going to be focused on helping business interests at the city and region and state level, and not so much caring about the average voters. They have respect, but not so much for our local government, but more so for their own time. So why should I go and vote and be involved in this process that I don't feel is going to help myself or my fellow citizens? So we believe it's incumbent on all of us to do whatever we can to increase voter participation in future municipal elections. 24 and 14% turnout is wrong. It's been low for years. And so to allow it to stay that way, we feel is also, as you mentioned in the beginning with that John Stuart Mill quote, mm-hmm. In action is a choice, and to choose to leave it the way it is, knowing that future election cycles are going to have low turnout, is wrong. So we'd ask for your help in trying to convince the city council to take action to fix this. If the situation was reversed, and right now we had municipal elections that were in a regular election cycle, and we already had ranked choice voting, I guarantee you there wouldn't be anybody arguing to move them to an off election year in the spring and have two rounds when you have ranked choice voting that does it all in one round. So especially now that we know the pattern of low voter turnout given that situation. So with regard to ranked choice voting, I'm going to assume that you're all familiar with it, and that packet, this stuff is from our friends at Fair Vote. It's got some visual aids that help explain it a little better. It's known in other countries around the world as instant runoff voting, preferential voting, single transferable vote, alternative vote. It's been around since the 1800s. It's currently being used in six countries, including the United States. Here in the U.S., it's being used in 13 states. It's been passed and awaiting implementation in an additional 5 states, including here in Florida and Sarasota.
May I interrupt that
yes.
question? Are any of those being used in state elections, or are you talking about they're being used in municipalities within states?
Some are, and the last page, I think it says which specific, there's a map there, it says which states have it, and it says what sort of similar states they use it for. Some use it for local stuff, some of them are state of Maine, and, you know, statewide. So you might have seen in the news this past week, actually, that Maine expanded theirs to include presidential primaries. And New York City will be voting this November on using it for their future elections. The major benefits that ranked choice voting brings to the election process is that it creates more civil and issue-oriented campaigns and disincentivizes negative campaigning. It eliminates the cost in money, time, and voter apathy of runoff elections. And it eliminates the spoiler effect and makes it easier for independent candidates and third-party candidates to compete. All of this combined should lead to much higher voter turnout and better and cheaper local elections that we can all be proud of. Lastly, I just want to share something I found of interest when reading through Abraham Lincoln's personal correspondence last year. Without even realizing at the time what he was describing, in a letter to Martin Morris dated March 26, 1843, he wrote, "I think it would then be proper for your meeting to appoint 3 delegates and to instruct them to go for someone as a first choice, someone else a second, and perhaps someone as a third. And if in those instructions I were named as the first choice, it would gratify me very much." So I just want to thank you for your time. And just to recap, to as much as your mandate will allow you to, we'd appreciate your help in convincing the City Council to move the elections to a standard November election cycle and to use ranked choice voting so we just have one round, don't have to worry about second round and drop off, and hopefully get a lot more voter turnout and participation. And if the candidates that get elected, you'll know if they have as close to a majority of support as possible. And thank you very much.
Can you tell me, how does ranked voting disincentivize negative ads?
So right now, if there's people running for a position and you just want to get enough votes to beat the other person. So if you are, attacking the other person and trying to just get enough people to beat the other person, the way it would work under ranked choice voting, if I want to make sure that I get enough votes, I don't want to necessarily attack you and then your supporters don't like me, because I might want them to be able to put me down as their second choice, or the point is to get to a majority a 50 plus one vote. So if I got my 34% of the vote, let's say, and I attack you and you've got 34% of the vote, well, your 34% of your voters might not put me down as their second choice. So it moves you away from wanting to attack people to try to appeal to more of the voter spectrum, if that makes sense.
I've got a question.
Sure.
I think I've got two.
Use
the mic. Her question. What would stop an individual from just making one choice?
You could certainly do that if you choose to. You could do that. Maine, where they used ranked choice voting this past election cycle, there were a lot of voters who did that. There was misinformation campaigns that had happened up there where candidates were telling people that if you pick additional choices, then your first choice won't get used, and it's not the case. So there were a lot of voters who, even though they had the ability to do ranked choice voting, they still only picked one and they didn't say who their second or third choices were.
My second question, I'm looking at your community use sheet, and on the last page you have Sarasota, Florida listed, and I'm noticing that it was adopted in 07, but it's still awaiting implementation with
that. So that's a great question. I'm glad you asked. So Sarasota passed it as a ballot measure because the local politicians didn't want to pass it. So the citizens got together and they passed the ballot measure on a local municipal ballot. And what's been the holdup for these last 10 years is the Secretary of State's office has been saying that the software needs to be certified, but they won't put out clear criteria of what needs to be in order to pass certification for ranked choice voting. So it's been tied up in, I believe there's lawsuits involved, so it's been tied up for the last 10 years because of that, purely waiting for the certification of the software so it can be done.
So then that's going to affect the entire state of Florida?
So what we're looking for right now, we're working with some other folks to try to get the new Secretary of State to give those clear guidelines of what they're looking for certification for the software. The goal of why we're coming to you and also to the city of Jacksonville is traditionally the way these types of things happen is you get them passed in as many municipalities as possible, and then it also helps to put pressure on the state to force them to deal with the issue. It's a lot easier than trying to get it implemented at the state level first and go down. And so if we pass it here in Jacksonville, then you know we would potentially run into the same issue as Sarasota, but you know, by having two, it would hopefully force the state to deal with the issue and say, okay, we're willing to let the software be certified. And the software already exists. There's two companies out there that have had the software with the ranked choice voting module in it for years. It's just being hung up through, you know, red tape and stuff. Yes, sir.
I'd discourage some of the stark language in that all politicians aren't corrupt. And you've probably seen...
If I said that, I apologize.
You did. And, you know, ranked voting won't eliminate a lot of stuff. It will certainly improve.
It helps.
It'll help a lot, yeah. So I just throw that out there.
My apologies, I did not mean to say that.
I was also at that Michael Kirk, I think, event at the WJCT, I think it was two nights ago. And he as well was asked, you know, whether the media is the problem in terms of people being disengaged and pissed off. And he said, yeah, they're all the same. Well, you know... Again, so
this whole
blanket statements are
our whole democratic reform movement. It's a big ball of yarn with a lot of strings we can pull at to fix our overall system. And this is one piece of the puzzle that we feel, you know. And Jacksonville had the motto of, you know, bold new city of the South, and I liked your comments earlier about being trailblazers and that kind of stuff. And so, you know, we'd love to see Jacksonville. You know, Sarasota obviously blazed the trail 10 years ago. We'd love to see Jacksonville join it. And definitely something that I think its time has come around the country, and we'd like to see Jacksonville be a part of it.
Sure. Yeah, just a couple things. My husband's from Australia, where that's how they run their elections, and he was appalled to see how you can split votes here and then get people in that nobody really wants in. You know, and he said, "Oh, this is a crazy system. Why don't you do ranked voting?" And you know, so. Certainly when I saw the elections over there, and I went to the national elections in Canberra in Australia, and it is really brilliant when you see it happen. It'll take a while before we get our country to that. But second thing is, in our charter, in the Jacksonville charter, we have the authority, and I remember writing it in there, for campaign and election ethics. You know, so in the charter itself, we have the ability to get into these areas. So we'd have to read that, kind of take a look at it, the legislative subcommittee, and kind of see exactly what authority. We can't, the Ethics Commission can't go in any old direction, but we have authority in campaign ethics, and this seems to tie into that. The last thing is, there's a really good video explaining this that Represent US has. And I almost sent it to everybody today. It really, it takes some of the slides here and puts it to, you've seen it, haven't you?
Probably so. I've seen a lot.
Yeah, it's just, it's really good. And by the time you get through about 3 minutes, you have a much better understanding of ranked voting. So I think it's an exciting idea. We have our conflict of interest laws that we talked about earlier are very complex. And everybody quibbles about the interpretation of conflict of interest laws. But where the real fight is, where we could really make a difference, is in campaign financing and election reform. And those are the big areas nationwide that I think that we could really make an impact for the next couple of decades for Jacksonville. You know, so it's sort of a bigger picture view of where we could go. But I will do any research or any support for the commission if you want to kind of look into those areas.
I just want to ask one question about United America. Have you done any comparison with, not comparison, but have you had any measured the impact of how ranked voting works relative to how voters mark the vote ballot?
I'm not familiar with any. There might be. I'd have to look and check and see. Fair Vote is the primary folks who are really focused on ranked choice voting. Each organization kind of has its own primary focus. Represent Us focuses primarily on purely anti-corruption laws and stuff. United America, our focus, we used to be called the Centrist Project. Our goal was to try to, you know, ease the path for future, you know, for independent candidates. We're not up front to be a party or anything. We just try to ease the path for independent candidates and potential third party candidates to compete better, so they don't get accused of being spoilers and that kind of stuff. And that's one thing that Ranked Choice Voting would help our, you know, our organization and support. So.
Any other questions?
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to refer this to the Open Government Committee. You could do some fact gathering. How do you think we can touch this? And we should.
Thank you.
Legislative has an opinion.
Legislative always has an opinion.
All right.
Good.
Yeah.
Carla, could you send the video that you were?
Sure, I'll send it tonight. You'll enjoy it. Yeah. I hope.
2019-393. I think this is going to be quick. Ms. Miller?
This is the one that the bill that we discussed in the legislative subcommittee, and this was John Cressenbeny's bill, revolving door, where right now the city council is regulated this way under state law. If you're on city council and your term is up, you can't come back and lobby the city council for 2 years. So what Councilmember Cressenbeny thought was a good idea is let's take all the boards and commissions of the city and do the same thing. when he talked to me about it, I said we have about 100 boards and commissions of the city. Why don't we take the important ones that file state financial disclosure, the ones that make decisions, the important boards of the city, and regulate those. So that's what the bill was, that, like, for instance, the Planning Commission makes zoning and planning land use decisions, final decisions. And so it's a board just like this, Planning Commission. So the question is, and I think it just happened, where you have someone leave the Planning Commission, their term is up, and then the next meeting they're appearing right in front of the Planning Commission. Hi, guys. You know, here I am. I am now representing this client in front of you. And so the question is, do we want to have that revolving door type?
That's not hypothetical, right? That happened very
recently. That happened. And when we have with the independent authorities, you have attorneys, a lot of times attorneys are on these boards, and so they become really familiar with, like someone that was on the Ethics Commission, very familiar with how we handle complaints. Their term is up, and then the next month you see them again. And do you want any time period, cooling off period? That's the question. Anyhow, that bill was filed. Last Ethics Commission meeting, we voted in support of Councilmember Cressenbeny's resolution, but it wasn't really our bill. We weren't really, like, working it. And went to the council this week and got defeated 6-1.
At rules.
I talked with Councilmember Cressenbeny, and someone asked, do you want to withdraw it? And he said, nope, I want it to go to a full vote of the council. I can tell you what that full vote's going to be next Tuesday. It'll be like 18-1. And there was a lot of confusion with it, like what boards it should cover, and, you know, so it was not well cooked. You know, it was, well, you know, like a little loose. So I talked to Councilmember Cressenbeny, and I asked him if he would withdraw it, and he said he would. And the good part about that is it means that we can refile it from the Ethics Commission. If it went and got defeated, we'd be banned for a year from even bringing it up. So I'm hoping that he withdraws it between now and next Tuesday. He told me he was going to do that. And the legislative committee seemed real excited about taking the issue on and picking it apart and researching it.
I thought a little bit about this after our discussion last meeting about this bill. And this is, so judges regularly will not preside over cases where their law firm is before them for a couple of years. Usually 2 years is sort of the standard. And it's the same thing, judges will not preside over cases, federal judges, when their law clerks are before them for 2 years. So this, and that's not universally true, right? Judges make their own choices, but this kind of restriction happens all across the government, the state level, it applies to council, as we found out.
Mm-hmm.
The judiciary is doing this. It doesn't make sense that we're not doing this too. I think last time I didn't have a real strong opinion about it, but I think this is a good idea. I hope the legislative committee will figure out how we can help.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on that?
Question.
Of course.
Does that Mine's include... Does that include the delegate, the Duval delegation, or are they exempt from any of the city stuff?
They're regulated by state law. And they have 2 years, just like our city council people. It's not our local law that's regulating them, it's state law. And in fact, the constitutional amendment that got passed last fall said 2 years, not enough, we're gone for 6 years. And so in 2 years, all of the elected officials coming into the entire state of Florida are gonna be banned for 6 years from coming in front of their body.
I'm yeah. aware of that.
Yeah.
I guess I'm kind of saying, do our delegation coming before Jackson.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's been brought up. That's been brought up many times before. Whether or not you can have a state legislator come in front, and I think the new bill, the new I'd have to look at the new constitutional amendment. I think that it prohibits that in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it did not, and so we had.
If they were former or anybody.
Current.
Former.
Well,
yeah.
I guess.
No,
like
they're
a
city.
Former city council.
Like
oh,
now
former. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
State level.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of complaints about that, because you can imagine a state legislator from Jacksonville, powerful, and then they come here and they, here's my client, and they're looking at the city council like, you want anything passed in Tallahassee? You know, this is, and so that's not that it would ever happen. But, you know, now that will be handled with the new constitutional amendment.
Moving on, Form 1, that?
People filing their Form 1s, as you all know, you file state financial disclosure. We're not naming names here, but there's some people
one.
That... One?
There's one.
Only one?
Only one.
Well, that's good. We won't name that name. But you still have until July 1st, so, you know.
Does that person know who that person is?
Does that person know who the person is?
They should.
Is that person here?
Really?
No.
You just said we weren't going to name names.
No, okay. Listen, we're not naming names, but whoever you are. No, we're not giving any clues. Just listen.
You'll know.
And you still, listen, you still have 10 days or so to get it filed, and we will hound that person's. We have got to have 100% participation and nobody be late. And I'm telling you, we have all the council people have filed except for a couple.
Gulliford and Boyer, last time I checked.
Yeah, okay. Well, we hound them.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of our compliance duties, we have like, how many people all together? Like 150, I don't know.
Oh,
like
yeah.
A lot of people that file financial disclosure with the State Ethics Commission. And we get meaner by the week, and we always turn in 100% compliance to the state, you know. So if you are that one person,
please do not let the
you guys
mean
never.
No, I'm sure that the commission will not be in that category. Anyhow, that's the reminder, but everyone's doing good. Thank you very much for getting it filed.
All right, Inspector General annual performance evaluation. I distributed the final template. Does anybody have any comments on that or on our Inspector General or the process?
It's colorful.
It is colorful. It's colorful.
That's
and
my
it,
only comment.
And it mostly makes sense.
It
which
mostly
is,
makes sense.
Which is not a bad place to be. Okay. No comments there? So on Monday, the Inspector General Selection and Retention Committee meets to give Ms. Green her first
mm-hmm.
review. And I feel a little lost in that process, but I will do my best. Thank you all for your wise guidance. All right, what's next? Constitutional Amendment 12. Who's taking that? This is the consolidated legislative report.
We discussed this at the meeting just before this evening's meeting at 4:30 we started. And the committee made a decision to recommend to the entire Ethics Commission that we support the State Ethics Commission in coming up with, a definition to disproportionate benefit, as well as the intent required for this particular amendment. So, I guess our next step is to come up with some language that we would like to pass on to the State Ethics Commission. basically just telling them, we support you, you have the, you know, the time into this to take a crack at it, and we're here to support you in any way we can.
So I got to attend that meeting right before this, and the only confusion I have is, what is it that you're proposing that we do? Are we just supporting, so that the constitutional amendment tells the State Ethics Commission that they have to create these rules, right? So are we supporting their current drafted rule, or are we just supporting the fact that they're doing what the amendment tells them to do? What are we doing?
Well, I think all of the above. Carla, do you want to speak to that? I mean, I think my understanding was it was all of the above, but they have some additional work to do in defining those things, because as it's written right now, it's very vague. Nobody can, people don't know how to conform to the law at this point. And so I think it was just us giving our support to them and continuing to try to sort through this and make it not vague.
Does everybody have this thing?
I've got extra copies here.
So it's the page that says 2207 at the bottom, right?
Yep, it is 34-18.
Yeah. So you have a couple sections here. You have the opening part, which is fine. Then you have two, which is the definition. So disproportionate benefit means the benefit, privilege, or exemption or result not available to similarly situated persons. That makes a lot of sense to me. That sounds like the definition of disproportionate. The fact, and then skipping down for a second, four is the intent, and that intent loosely mirrors our misuse of position intent, which makes a lot of sense. Some of the proposals, if you flip through them, made this almost quasi-criminal, and that's really, really hard to prove, as we've seen with, for example, sunshine violations. So I like the standard here, which is in four. Three is a little bit interesting. So three says, you've got this definition under two, which presumably you could find either yes or no, it's giving you a benefit that is not available to a similarly situated person. But then you have the commission will consider these factors in determining whether it is disproportionate. And so I guess now what we're acknowledging in three is that there are varying degrees of disproportionality. But I don't understand how the commission is supposed to figure this out.
Like two definitions for disproportionate.
Right. So benefit. So two would seem like a threshold analysis. It either is, you either are or are not receiving a benefit, privilege, or exemption that is not available to a similarly situated person.
Right.
But then three tells you, in deciding whether it's disproportionate, you're going to look at things like the class of the person, and I just don't see how those two fit together. So why does the class of the people who will experience the benefit matter? The question is just yes or no, it's disproportionate.
I actually read it differently,
okay.
If you allow me. So I read two in conjunction with three. So what a disproportionate benefit is something that's not available to similarly situated persons. How do you know if they're similarly situated? You go to number three. Who's in the class?
So is it good or bad if it's a bigger class?
Well, what is the class?
So the class is defined under three by the size, the nature of the interest, who's in it. Is it going to be your wife, your spouse, your child, all of those? That's how I read it. I read them in conjunction together. But that may not be right. Yeah.
So if there's a lot of people who receive the benefit, that's a good thing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right. Okay. That is how, by the way, the voting conflict law analysis goes. And when I read this mirrored that to me, or at least tried, maybe attempted to. So one of the considerations in whether or not you have a voting conflict, in other words, whether to have a voting conflict, it has to be a special economic benefit or loss to you, your principal by whom you're retained, or your relative.
And with the right records, you can figure that out.
That's right.
Yes or no.
Right. And one of the considerations or factors for that is the size of the class of the persons affected. So the more people affected by that matter that you're voting on, the less likely it is to be a voting conflict, a special benefit or loss to you, because so many other people are getting that same benefit or loss. Does that make sense?
It does to me.
Okay.
Maybe add the size of the class of the people or the persons who will experience the benefit. If you can add that. I don't know.
I just think this two or three needs some work in figuring out how this is actually going to apply to it. Like, how do I look at this as an official bound by it and figure out if this benefit is disproportionate?
Not that our task state, mm-hmm. not necessarily
yes.
try to
mm-hmm.
define us.
Exactly.
Because really the basis of our, what I thought of our understanding is that if you can trust your gut, right, if it feels wrong, it probably is wrong. And so all those lobbyists who are saying, we want you to meet that higher standard, that's really not acceptable because the people have voted on this amendment and said, look, we want people, they should receive a disproportionate benefit. And if they do, they should be disciplined for it.
Mm-hmm.
It should be a violation of the ethics.
I might add, too, that a lot of the laws at the state level are like this. You read them and you look at them and you think, what am I supposed to do? And you decide that by taking a look at all of the State Ethics Commission opinions, how the courts have determined things, and you know, and through training. I wish it was easy, like do not steal. Okay, that's great, that's easy. But then you get these disproportionate benefit. What in the world does that mean? And so that's going to come through many years of experience and court decisions. And I don't think they can write a rule initially that is comprehensive enough to cover all the situations that people are bringing up. What about this? What about that? Well, yeah, years in the courts, and we're going to have some of those answers, unfortunately, because it's complicated.
I think the example that Ms. Gallner used was about pornography. You know, we don't know how to describe it, but we know it when we see it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Hard to train people on that, though, I'll tell you, because...
I'm not sure that's true with disproportionate benefit, mm-hmm. though.
Yeah.
Well, you know, someone who goes out and lobbies a vendor
mm-hmm.
and receives a kickback from that, just on the face alone, that's a disproportionate benefit.
Sure.
So I think, you know, we're lawyers, we think like lawyers, and I think kind of plain meaning, if you start with the plain meaning of the words, that's going to give us a lot of guidance
mm-hmm.
on
mm-hmm.
where to go. And even though we're at the Jacksonville level, we're just providing support for the state level, I think those types of analyses, even though they're very simple and kind of basic, will lend a lot towards how do we look at this situation.
So what are you envisioning that this resolution would say?
I haven't thought that far in advance. but I do think that, you know, because we are trailblazers and because we're at the forefront, because we really do internalize, and because we have Ms. Miller guiding us, that we have an obligation to say something. And we can, you know, work with the team to decide what you're going to be putting out for us on our behalf.
To be transparent, when we were talking earlier in the other committee meeting, I did think we were voting to support this as it was submitted,
mm-hmm.
that we were going to throw our support behind what they had submitted. So that may have been my own misunderstanding, but I was...
I think that's an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So this goes on through October?
Oh, they have to have the final rule by October. So within the next week, they're going to publish another workshop, and then they're going to go to the State Ethics Commission, and bam, it's going to be done. I don't think we have enough time to mull over it for a month and come back with another meeting and then present something. I think if we want to make an impact, that there are local ethics commissions that are in support of the state, and you go, State Ethics Commission. If we want to do that, now is the time to do that.
Yeah, Mr. Wilk, I think that... You know, we hear the lobbyists talk about it should be really a 6-year period and something along the lines of criminal intent. I think it would be sufficient for our organization to say something along the lines of that's really too high of a standard to set, should be a much lower standard, especially
mm-hmm.
since this amendment was voted on by the people.
So my struggle is with 3,
mm-hmm.
as is probably clear. And so 2 and 4, I support entirely. And I think 4 is probably the biggest issue,
mm-hmm.
although I saw some replacements for 2 that were absurd. But 4 is probably the biggest issue, figuring out what's the standard here. And
mm-hmm.
it says knowledge, which I think is the right one for what is effectively a civil infraction, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is not a criminal violation?
Mm-mm. No.
And so... That I'm on board with, but I guess what I couldn't support is just a wholesale, this is good, pass it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that I can't be outvoted. Obviously I can, but think that's what I think.
Well, I think Ms. Miller has a really good point, is that we have such a short time frame,
mm-hmm.
and although we tend to like to delve into things, I think in this situation, we really can't because we're not going to have enough time. I think if this, we had this proposal that we were evaluating last December, for instance, we would have had enough time to do some research, to look at some other areas across the state and say, well, you know, we really think that Part 3 should say X, Y, and Z. But I think the general gist of this is, again, that the lobbyist, that really high standard, is not what the people want. What the people are saying is that if you feel in your gut that it feels wrong, it probably is wrong.
Mm-hmm. So what I would suggest is we could say the State Ethics Commission should continue to take in input and make changes in sense, you know, with better wording, to the factors that they put into this rule, but that the definition and the standard are consistent with what we think is in the public interest.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly what I feel. But if you want to, if somebody wants to propose a motion along those lines or along the lines of just, we think this is the right thing, period, then now's probably the time.
I move that we send a letter of support to the State Ethics Commission stating that they should charge ahead but still get input. Does that make sense? From constituents. For those who are interested in the ethics rule.
Okay. So we're going to send a resolution.
We have a second.
Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second. So we'll open to that for discussion first.
So my thought is sending information and support is along the right line, but I don't think it's strong enough. I think mm-hmm. that we should support it more strongly around the definitions that they established.
I agree.
Okay.
But I want to give some deference to Mr. Rogan as
mm-hmm.
our chair, who feels that one part of this needs to be strengthened.
Is there a way to like get a happy medium around telling the State Ethics Commission that we love the way they define disproportionate benefit, we
mm-hmm.
support the way they
the standard
found intent, the standard that they found and either say nothing about three or four.
That they should continue to take input and
yeah, maybe language that they could elaborate more on the factors in three to give more guidance to the public. So if they elaborate on those
yes.
factors, they're giving more meat to it so that people can determine their actions. We like two, we like four, but can you give more direction on the factors? Yeah.
Or consider giving more direction if they decide not to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I think as people that are involved in this state ethics movement, we should support them. I like that. Two and four is good. Three, consider, or please take into consideration these concerns.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further comment?
Is there a motion, though? Do we?
There's a motion by Ms. Boykin and a second by Ms. Smith.
But
it sounds like friendly amendments that you would be amenable to, that you would accept from Ms. Smith and Dr. Candler.
Yes, I accept both of those friendly amendments.
Okay.
And I second.
All right. So we have a motion and a second as amended. Is there any further discussion by the members or staff here? Okay.
Yes. Can the motion be restated with the friendly amendments to make sure we have it accurately reflected?
Let me see if I can clarify the motion. As I understand it, the motion is that this commission send a resolution in support 34-18.001 that supports the definition and the standard the State Ethics Commission has created and encourages the Ethics Commission to consider providing concrete guidance on the factors.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
Is that what you intended to say?
Yes. Second.
All right. Is there any further discussion in the commission or staff? No. All right. Is there any public comment on this issue? Step up, please.
My name is Jose Torres. I came here with Unite America Group. And to me, with 80% of the people that are staff, say it nicely, I think one and two covers it. Three, you're giving the people a way out. It is totally waters the entire amendment to me. In all due respect, when I see pornography, I'll know it. That hasn't worked too well. And I don't think politicians are going to say, oh, I see something wrong here. You have to put it in black and white. That's what the people want. One and two, forget about three. It waters it down, gives them an out. Anyway, that's just what I have to say.
Thank you for your comment. Is there any further public comment? Hearing none. Is there any discussion about that? All right. In that case, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay. By your action, you have approved that. Although, I don't know if I have any discretion to write it.
That could be another motion.
I think we probably need a motion to reconsider.
No, dear.
I move that we reconsider this.
Okay, is there a second on that?
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second to reconsider. I don't think I have to offer discussion on that, do I?
You do need to vote on it, though.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Do I have to offer discussion on it? Is there any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? All right, by your action, we will now reconsider our prior, Ms. Boykin's prior motion.
So with that motion, I add to that that you should seek help from Ms. Miller and Ms. Oberdorfer on the language that should be used in that letter to the State Ethics Commission.
But I'll have the discretion to create that language?
Yes.
Okay. Do you second that?
Second, yes.
Discretion to create the letter.
All right. Is there any further discussion? A motion and a second on the reconsidered motion. Is there any further public comment? Hearing none, we'll vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? All right, by your action, you have approved that reconsidered motion. There's a Robert's Rules fun little period there. All right, let's get
to online posting.
Okay, so the last item is online posting of resolutions and written dispositions of complaints. Or either earlier this year or late last year, approved that going forward, we will post online any written dispositions of complaints that we issue. There have not been any since we've done that. We have not had any written dispositions since then. But what I wanted to raise, and I spoke with Ms. Oberdorfer earlier this week, is about resolutions. So we've posted two resolutions from 2017 that we passed, and nothing since, although we passed a number of them. So I think what we need to figure out is, do we want to post those or not? And if we do, then we should. But what does everybody think?
I think we post everything that comes out of this commission.
I agree.
I was thinking similarly. I can't think of a reason why we wouldn't want to post it. Can you?
No.
Let me just ask Ms. Oberdorfer, when you post the minutes, isn't the resolution also posted with the minutes?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's there,
no,
but it's
not
as easy to find.
No, it's not.
The vote on the resolution is in there in the
but
description.
But the resolution itself is not.
No.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right.
But we could add the resolution to the minutes.
Since it's a part of the minutes, why not just add it?
So the way in 2017...
Well,
because
it wouldn't be accessible.
In 2017, we posted the resolutions to the main ethics commission page. But I think there are boards that post their resolution and supporting materials with the minutes. Does anybody have... Is there something that's mechanically easier or harder?
There is an issue with scanning in materials through a scanner that is not, though. There's an issue with accessibility by persons with disabilities. The material that's posted on the city website has to be ADA accessible, and there's been an increased enforcement actions in regards to not having accessible materials, and anything that you send in through a feeder on a scanner and posted online is not readable. It's not accessible. It has to have been created as a PDF from your computer in order to be readable. It's a huge issue.
Ms. Pollack, do you know anything about that?
No, but I will ask just a follow-up to Ms. Oberdorfer. Wouldn't you just scan the resolution as a PDF and just post it?
Could you see art?
Would that?
You can't, because, I mean, you can scan it and post it, but you run into the issue that it's not accessible. It's not accessible by a reader for persons with disabilities. That's the issue.
And that's true even if you run OCR so that it's, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Optical character recognition.
A.
We'll figure it out.
Our system doesn't have the capability to do that right now that I know of.
What about the city councils? So the city council, they post everything, that all of their meetings, they scan it. And so would that be something
I don't
similar?
Know about city council. I can't speak to them. I don't do that. But I can tell you what I've been told by Public Affairs, which runs the city website, is that we had to, not just we, all departments and all boards and commissions in the city had to take down any outdated material that was not accessible by a reader. Mm-hmm. So if you go into the page for our minutes, you will see only minutes from 2019. You will not see them from any other prior years. And we're supposed to be having additional training sometime in July on how to make things accessible. But the issue is with scanning them. And right now we don't, to my knowledge, have the capability to scan in something, post it on the web, and have it be accessible.
Now presumably we could get around that by posting taking the Word version
mm-hmm.
and typing in, you know, original signed or something like that and posting that, right? Would that work?
Let's just cut to the chase here. We'll figure it out
yeah.
so it gets posted.
Yeah.
There is a technical way to do it.
Thing.
Yeah, but the city just recently started this huge thing. And in fact, like if you have little pictures, I used to have little pictures on the website, you know, no pictures, unless it has a description underneath of what the picture says. And so you have to think differently about how does a disabled person access the website. So a lot of stuff is going through transition right now, but we will figure out a way to get the resolutions up there. I don't know what that will be, but by the next meeting, they'll be up there.
But they'll only be from 2019.
But they'll only be from 2019.
Okay.
We'll figure it out.
That sounds good to me. I don't even think we need a motion. Does anybody have anything else on that? Okay. All right, I think that's it. Does anybody have anything else?
When's our next meeting? August?
Did you do public comments?
I did
overall?
Not. No, I didn't.
Okay.
I'll get to that.
That's what I'd like to get at. I mentioned before that, you know, we had a comment about the third part or the fourth part of the amendment
third
and
part.
Didn't get a response. Could we give them a one or two sentence, just simple explanation why we did not like the suggestion or why we think that, you know, sticking, why not changing was a way to go?
Well, what I will say is, probably not, because I'm not sure everybody would have the same view that we could give one coherent response. But if you have a thought, you're welcome.
I'm a lawyer, and you know, it's not.
And it's just public comment.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you personally why I didn't, and
even that.
And that is because I think three, as it was written, I thought I said, is only trying to back off of two, and that's the point. I think they need to make it more concrete. There has to be yes or no determinations. You can't have. Well, it is disproportionate, but maybe it isn't if enough people are proportionate.
Let's find a way, like I said, I just get uncomfortable, and my wife and I talk about this in the next week as well. She gets a bit uncomfortable when somebody comments and then goes with it. Just a simple response, I think. I feel like it is impossible.
You know, can I just respond to that? And it's here's an interesting thing, because you're the audience here. Like you come and make a comment, what happens with city council is there's time for public comments, but if, as same as in Jacksonville Beach, and if every council person said, well, let me explain my viewpoint to you. No, let me explain my view. Then you get into a whole nother debate. And so there's a time consideration to it. And typically if there's an issue that's going on, you can present papers, you can meet with any of us, you can call us, and we can get out position papers, and we can do all that. But to go for back and forth for public comments, that the time at the end or right before you vote is, I want you to consider this. But for us to get into a back and forth is not typically what's done in a deliberative body.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel a little guilty, though, too, like, you know, someone comes up and, you know, pours their heart out, and then you say, thank you for your comment, we're going to go on and vote the way we want to. I mean,
but it's a part of the record, so.
It's part of the record. It's part of the record, and if anybody does have a question, like in city council, sometimes they'll say, that's a good point, I want to ask that person another question. You know, so you always have the ability to do that. It's not rude, really. I mean, it's just the...
I think it can be perceived in a way. You said yourself that, you know, it feels a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, it does. It does. Like, thank you for your comment. We're going to move on now. Yeah. What's that about?
And some of the other things they do in council, if they want to address the specific comment that's heard, because it's not public debate, it's public comment. It's one-way direction for the public to give their comments to council. It's not intended as an interaction. So what they will do is, if they're interested in following up on that or getting an explanation, they'll ask somebody to step to the side, and they will engage in individual dialogue with that person.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay. With that, we'll move on to general public comment. So before we have public participation on that specific item that's before us, is there any general public comment?
If I could just give you a little tip on your file issue, there's a website, I don't know if you've ever heard, called Zamzar. Conversions. I've used it for years with website stuff, being the webmaster for my daughter's PTO for school. And you can change any file format to any other file format. It's a free service. You just upload the file and it'll send you right back to you.
Good.
What's it called?
Damzar.
Zamzar.
Damzar. Okay. Thank you, Perry. Thank you.
Could you give us your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Terry Mills.
Hi.
Hi. Is there a person that we could contact and state that we have seen this proposal, and would it be the Braden Schaefer? Is that who? Or?
What I'll do to answer your question is I'll send Perry the information on if you want to write an individual letter. That would be good for everybody, and to get it out to your entire group, and just write letters saying, you know what, we saw your rule, and you know, we're in support, we're not in support, you know, and they have citizens that are actually interested in it. And if you have chapters around the state, you get it out to them, you know, so that if they have 20 lobbyists, they have 200 citizens, you know, like that get letters out to him. That would be very helpful. So I'll send that information to Perry so he can get it out to everyone. Good point.
Anything else? Okay. I don't have any announcements, do you?
Mm-hmm.
And we have our next meeting scheduled in August, and I hope that the legislative committee will meet in July,
mm-hmm.
Since you guys have a lot. And then
open government
whenever you get a chance. All right. I think that's it. Anything else that we need to do? With that, we're adjourned. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.